Hi, and welcome to the Dream Season Podcast, an oral history of the 1989-90 UConn men's basketball season, also known as the Dream Season. This is Episode 8, The Turning Point. Jim Calhoun and the Huskies thought they had turned the corner after stumbling in their first Big East game of the season against Villanova. After that 64-57 loss at home, UConn cruised to wins over three non-conference opponents. Their ferocious 2-2-1 full-court press, dubbed the Steel Curtain, continued to overwhelm opponents, while the half-court offense, a focus for Coach Calhoun, had also shown improvements. The next test awaited the Huskies on Tuesday, January 2nd, when they traveled to Queens, New York to take on St. John's at Alumni Hall. Alumni Hall, which would eventually be rechristened Carnesecca Arena in honor of St. John's legendary coach Lou Carnesecca, was the on-campus home for St. John's. This would be the final time that UConn would play at Alumni Hall, as all future matchups would be held at Madison Square Garden. Since entering the Big East, UConn had struggled mightily against St. John's, sporting a 2-18 record in their matchups, including 0-10 at Alumni Hall. UConn's win the previous season at the Hartford Civic Center ended a 17-game losing streak, which dated back to the 1980-81 season. St. John's entered the game with a record of 12-2, 1-0 in the Big East, and was ranked number 16 nationally. They were led by point guard Boo Harvey and a formidable front court of Jason Williams, Malik Sealy, and Robert Wardan. For the third consecutive game, Nadav Hanifeld started in place of Dan Cerulik, joining Scott Burrell, Rod Sellers, Chris Smith, and Tate George on the court to start the game. The Huskies jumped out to a 6-4 lead with 17:40 left in the first half. And then the wheels came off. I mean, they really came off. Over the next 3 minutes, St. John's went on a 15-2 run to lead 19-8 with 14:06 left in the half. The lead stretched to 35-17 with 7 minutes remaining in the half. UConn trimmed the deficit to 13 points at 44-30 with 1:24 left before going down 48-32 at halftime. Point guard Boo Harvey decimated UConn's 2-2-1 full-court press, often leading to 3-on-2 or 2-on-1 fast break opportunities. The Johnnies also didn't miss much, making 20 of 29 shots for 68.9% in the first half. UConn, on the other hand, took 12 more shots and made 6 fewer than St. John's, going 14 of 41 for 34.1%. After falling behind by so much so early, the Huskies looked to make up the deficit by shooting 3-pointers. They were 1 of 10 in the first half, while St. John's was 3 of 5. Against Villanova in mid-December, UConn was down 15 at halftime and came out of the locker room energized, eventually cutting the Nova lead to just 4 after the first 8 minutes of the second half. History would not repeat itself on this night. St. John's started the second half on a 10-0 run. Calhoun attempted to stop the onslaught by using his timeouts, but to no avail. The lead ballooned to as much as 36 points before the game mercifully ended with a 93-62 St. John's victory. The postmortem analysis was as bad as you might expect. UConn entered the game holding opponents to a field goal percentage of 39.2%. St. John's shot 68.6%. The Huskies shot even worse than the Villanova game, going 26 of 80 for 32.5%, including 2 of 16 from three-point range. The 31-point margin of defeat was the largest for a Calhoun-coached UConn team, and UConn's worst Big East loss since the 1984-85 season, a 97-64 loss to, you guessed it, St. John's. Boo Harvey finished with 20 points and 10 assists, while the trio of St. John's big men of Williams, Sealy, and Wardan scored a combined 54 points on 23 of 29 shooting. Only three Huskies scored in double figures. Tate George had 12, Rod Sellers had 11, and Chris Smith had 10, while going 3 of 14 from the floor. Scott Burrell was playing with a sore left knee after twisting it against St. Joseph's in the opener of the Connecticut Mutual Classic. He managed just 2 points on 1 of 6 shooting, but more importantly, struggled to keep up with Malik Sealy defensively. Burrell refused to blame his balky knee, saying after the game, "I just played bad. I felt slow. Malik kept going by me, but he's a quicker player." Coach Calhoun was not exactly at a loss for words following the game, but he was perplexed. Said Calhoun, quote, "They're the 16th ranked basketball team in the country. Obviously, they're a terrific basketball team. We realize that. But did I expect this to happen? No. Did I think it could happen? No. Did I, in my wildest dreams, think it could happen? No. Did it happen? Yes. And I don't have an explanation for it." End quote. UConn strength coach Jay Hoffman recalls what it was like sitting on the bench that night.
We're playing St. John's in St. John's, but a lot of the games, eventually all the games would be against UConn. We played in Madison Square Garden, but the regular season game we actually played on campus, St. John's campus in Jamaica, in Lily Hall. Now that's really right on top. You're right on top of, the crowd's right on top of you. Small court on campus. And since I'm from New York, that was special. I played at St. John's, so I was going back home. I knew a lot of people there. I got my brother, at the time, his fiance tickets. My wife was there. And I also was with a couple of former players who were playing for the Jets coming to the game. In fact, I brought the Jets to a couple of guys from the Jets to the pregame meal to meet Jim and to see the players. So it was a lot of fun. We get to the game, and St. John spanks us. It wasn't even close from the get-go. They just destroyed us. It was like we had the pregame meal and we forgot to show up. We left the jock strap or shoes, something. Something was left at the hotel, but we definitely weren't there. And we again, 20 points down pretty quickly. So Jim goes, he's pretty emotional. He's always emotional. He said, my seat on the bench is always towards the end of the bench. The coaching, the guys that make the decisions, they're by him. I'm at the end of the bench. My family's right behind me. We got tickets right behind me. He comes down and he's pissed. He comes down, looks at me. The weightlifting sucks. They're weak. And he starts getting my case. I'm like, God, my wife, my brother's right behind me. And Jim doesn't hold back. Deep Boston accent cursing me. So, oh man, I said, I don't know if I stand up and go toe-to-toe with him. So there's a ton of embarrassment in my hometown. That's not good. And he walks his way back there. And then he comes back in the game. He goes, what should we do with the foul shots? And I'm looking at him. I said, did you really expect me to give you the answer on that one? If I knew the answer, I'd be sitting up by you, not by back here. What are you asking me for? And so I learned to keep my mouth shut. And one of those things to keep, you know, just let him vent. And it was then really funny. He starts getting on the assistant coaches, Howie, Dave, and but he ripped into it. It was pretty rough. And all of a sudden, he turns around and says, what should we do now? And they already got enough pissed, and they refused to answer. They turned their heads down. He turns around and says, guys, really? You're going to get upset now? Give me an answer. He just really realized he crossed the line, but it was hysterical. Guys, they were kind of ignoring. They were all upset about it, but it was pretty bad. And every once in a while I get a clunker like that, but you look back on it and that was funny, but at the time that was a rough evening.
Before the Huskies could begin the long trek back to Storrs, assistant coach Howie Dickenman remembers Coach Calhoun enacting some discipline first, but not because of what happened on the court. Said Howie, quote, the team was pulled off the bus by Jim Calhoun. We had left the locker room a mess with tape on the floor and ice packs all over. Jim made everyone go back in and clean it all up. Ever since, UConn has always left the locker room in better shape than they had found it. End quote. Here's an archival interview from Tate George about what happened when they returned to campus that night.
We got beat by St. John's at their place by 31 points in the middle of the season. And we took the bus ride back. And I remember talking to John Gwynn and Lyman and them asking us, what happened? Because we had won a few games and we started feeling good about ourselves. Well, we got back to campus and we had practice at 2 in the morning.
After the Huskies completed another infamous Calhoun late night post-game practice session, the coaching staff gathered to discuss the path forward. UConn's vaunted steel curtain defense, the 2-2-1 full court press, had been extremely effective against the non-Big East teams that the Huskies had faced earlier in the season. But after St. John's shredded that press, resulting in an 0-2 start to the Big East season, Calhoun wondered if they would be better off scaling back the pressure. Here's UConn's longtime director of athletic communications, Tim Tolokin, on the aftermath of the St. John's loss.
The game that really hit me was when we go January 2nd to St. John's and lose by 31. I mean, we were hammered. And so much so, that the coaches actually had a discussion. I mean, we had great success early with the 2-2-1 press and all that and steals and everything like that. But against St. John's, Boo Harvey, they picked us apart. And the coaches literally had a discussion. Should we not throw it out the door, but should we back off the pedal a little bit? Because with teams with good guards, could we get picked apart? That's the game I really remember.
Here's UConn assistant coach Dave Lato recalling that fateful coaches meeting.
Yeah, so we were kind of getting pressed out of the building. We're giving up easy baskets, high percentage shots, those kind of things. And I, as you mentioned it, I hadn't thought of it in a long time, that that conversation. It was much more Howie and Jim, you know, and the role of an assistant is to be a suggestor and not a decision maker. So we got, you know, all kind of answers, you know, because it's not on us, it's on coach. And so the tenor of the conversation was about, I think we need to pull back because we're just, you know, again, we're going up against these kingpins and we're getting beat here. And just, you know, a humbling loss at St. John's will do that to you. Okay, well, maybe. And it was more Jim than anybody, like, no, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it even better. And to become more demanding of it, more grinding, you know, breaking it down, spending more time in practice on breakdown drills and teaching it and creating a chemistry between those five guys. And so, you know, I'll put the credit directly on him because he was the one to say in those meetings, no, we're not going to back up. We're going to go forward even more. And so I do remember, you know, I don't know if I call it an argument as much as a lengthy and heated discussion about how, you know, as assistants, particularly Howie, who was the lead, you know, the lead guy, and, you know, between Glenn and I and he of, the, you know, maybe we shouldn't. And Jim saying, no, you know, the heck with you guys, I'm going to do it and do it even better.
Finally, here's Coach Calhoun on the loss and that meeting.
Jason Williams made like three pointers in his career, made two in that game late, which I complained to Louie about. He gave me the famous lines, Irish, which is what he called me. Remember, you can only coach one team at a time, which I thought was great. And I loved him. But my point was, he's 100% right. And, you know, we walked out there saying, the one thing you can't do, you can do a lot of things somewhat half speed. You can't coast in a press because that means layups for the other team. And that's what we did that day. We got scared in the press, wasn't quite as effective, and we got blown out. Later on, though, we proved that press pretty good. And I still remember you alluded to it, the meeting we have the coaches and best coach, maybe we should sit back. I said, sit back. We're only going to speed up. Our next practice was about a three-hour practice of nothing but pressing. This is our identity. This is who we are. And this is what we're going to be.
The Huskies had 3 days to prepare for their next game, a home matchup with the Pittsburgh Panthers at the Civic Center on Saturday, January 6th. Part of that preparation included their first practice in their soon-to-be new home. The first game at the still-unfinished $21.6 million Harry A. Gamble Pavilion was 3 weeks away, but the first practice on the new court was held on Thursday, January 4th. The Huskies had attempted to practice there a week earlier, but the dust from the ongoing construction had made the court too slippery. Calhoun was looking forward to the switch from the Fieldhouse to Gamble, as he knows the upgrade will take some getting used to. Quote, I don't know how long it will take them to feel comfortable. We went to Alaska and it felt strange. But after 2 days there, everybody was settled in and that was their home. I think the players will adapt very quickly. The key will be when we start playing games there and how well we do. Boston College struggled some in its new building last year. But if you win, it becomes a home court advantage. End quote. The excitement of using the brand new facility for the first time was tempered by the absence of one of the key members of the team, Scott Burrell. Burrell had an MRI in his left knee, but the results wouldn't be reviewed until the morning of the Pittsburgh game. Calhoun was preparing for the Panthers as if Scott would not be available, in which case Dan Cerulek would move back into the starting lineup. Calhoun also increased the practice workload for Murray Williams and freshman Terrena Walker. The Panthers, who were predicted to finish third in the conference, also came into the game looking for their first Big East win of the season. Earlier in the week, they nearly upset number one Syracuse at home, losing 80-78. Pitt was dealt a blow when they lost starting point guard Sean Miller for the season after undergoing foot surgery. They were led by forward Brian Shorter, who was averaging 21 points per game. The Huskies were down 6-2 after the first 4 minutes when Calhoun subbed in Lyman DePriest. Lyman was tasked with denying the ball from Shorter. Said Calhoun, quote, Pitt was looking for Shorter. When DePriest took that option away from them, Pitt became a perimeter team. Perimeter defense is our strength defensively, and that made our job easier, end quote. As the first half moved along, the game was tied at 19 with 3:11 left. After a Tate George steal led to a hoop and foul by Rod Sellers, Pitt head coach Paul Evans was teed up. Chris Smith made one of two technical free throws, followed by a George jumper from the lane to put UConn up 24-19. The Huskies forced 14 first-half turnovers and led at halftime 30-24. UConn started the second half with a 12-4 run, but the Panthers cut the deficit to 6 at 47-41 with 10:05 left in the game. After a timeout by Calhoun, consecutive layups by Smith and George, followed by a three-pointer by Smith, pushed the Huskies' lead to 56-41 with 6:16 left, effectively sealing the win. The final score was UConn 79, Pittsburgh 61. The Huskies now sported a 1-2 record in the Big East. Said Calhoun after the game, "When we lost to St. John's, I said I loved this team. And that was after a 31-point defeat. And I still kind of like them." The win was also the 1,000th win in the history of the UConn men's basketball program. The Steel Curtain made a rousing comeback, forcing 26 Pitt turnovers, including 17 steals, 5 each by George and Nadav Hennefeld. Chris Smith scored a career-high 28 points, and Tate George finished with 16 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 5 steals, and only 2 turnovers. Smith and George combined for 31 of UConn's 49 second-half points. Lyman DePriest didn't score any points, but once again, his play on the defensive end played a key role in the Huskies' win. Calhoun said DePriest's play on Saturday was, quote, magnificent. The news was not all positive following the win over Pittsburgh. After the game, it was announced that Scott Burrell would undergo arthroscopic surgery on Monday, January 8th, to remove some torn meniscus from his left knee. The surgery was successful, and the hope was that Burrell would be back to full strength in about a month. In the meantime, a trip to Pennsylvania was in store for another matchup with Villanova. The Wildcats were now 2-1 in the Big East, and coming off a huge win in their last game, a 93-74 trouncing at the previously unbeaten and number one team in the nation, Syracuse. UConn was 0-10 against Villanova in their building since joining the Big East and looking to avenge their 64-57 loss to the Wildcats just over a month ago. The Huskies went with a new starting lineup, swapping Murray Williams for Dan Srulik, who joined Hennefeld, Sellers, Smith, and George. UConn jumped out to a 14-4 lead early, thanks to some sloppy play by Villanova. The Huskies forced 14 turnovers in the first half, on the way to a 29-20 halftime lead.
And the first half belongs to the Connecticut Huskies. They dominate play from the opening get-go, 29-20 at the half. Connecticut by 9, and we'll be back here to DuPont after these words from your local station. 9-point edge, 29-20 over the Villanova Wildcats at halftime, and field goal percentages for both clubs, nothing to really write home about. Connecticut got off to a good start, then cooled off, 11 of 28. Villanova just 6 of 19, so both clubs in the 30% field goal shooting range. And it was Rod Sellers with 10 points in the first half who was the most consistent offensive player going.
A complete package, really. They need somebody without Scotty here. And I think they ran the floor well, Mike. You mentioned the inability to shoot. They didn't finish some plays, but they certainly didn't lack for effort. They exploited the defense whenever they could.
Villanova 14 turnovers, and Nadav Hennefeld, a big part in that. The official stats have him for 4 steals. Bill and I both had him for about 6 or 7. Yeah.
Early in the second half, UConn's play began to eerily resemble the first matchup when the Huskies shot 33%.
Here's Hennefeld again. Better job defensively by Villanova. There it is again.
Finds Smith. Misses another layup.
Christopher.
That's going to be the 4th layup that Chris Smith has missed tonight.
Well, that's lack of concentration. He must be jerking the delivery, too.
Nova closed the deficit to 3 points at 35-32. When Nadav Hennefeld and Chris Smith helped UConn right the ship.
Smith, big league 3, front rims it. Hennefeld kept it alive, and George keeps it down.
Well, they are out scrapping them right now.
Murray Williams leaves it. Hennefeld takes it. Oh, bad. Oh!
The kiss!
Did I say bad shot? Did I start to say bad shot?
I think he'd be the first to admit it. You don't think he meant that?
He'll tell you he called it.
This is where poise is needed. You need George and Smith to make sure they get a good one.
Hennefeld leaves it. Smith knocks it down.
And the dribble penetration by the point forward. Dove, Hennefeld.
10 for Smith. That was 3, and it pumps the lead to 6. Connecticut up to Smith. He squares up and knocks it down.
Boy, as quickly as you can, he got the feet set.
13 for Chris Smith. Biggest lead of the night. It's 15. 47-32. Halfway through the second half.
With UConn up 47-34, Jim Calhoun was issued his first technical foul of the season.
And they've got a foul on Smith.
No, he got a technical on Jimmy Calhoun because he felt Hennefeld was stepped under by Taylor.
Jim Calhoun doesn't believe it was called on him.
Jimmy was looking over at us.
Now he's really upset.
Oh.
He didn't realize the tee was called on.
No, he may have jumped because of the non-call, but he didn't attack the referee. And, of course, some guys pay attention to the bench. Now, there's one thing he didn't want to do is get one.
Was it Ted Valentine who made the call? Or?
No, Donnie Gray. He came out from under the basket. But, you know, you are going to get excited on the sidelines. And I just think sometimes you got to look the other way.
The Huskies lead ballooned to 56-39 with 6 minutes 21 seconds left when Raleigh Massimino yanked all 5 players off the floor and replaced them with little-used reserves. Raleigh said he was, quote, trying to make things happen with some other guys in there, end quote. But the home crowd and UConn players saw it differently. Said Rod Sellers, I couldn't believe he made them quit. That was amazing. Sellers had a monster game, finishing with 18 points, 7 rebounds, 3 steals, and 2 assists. Here's 2 of Rod's points, assisted thanks to a beautiful pass from Hennefeld.
Hennefeld leaves it for Pikel, back to Smith. Connecticut content to take some time off the clock. Hennefeld to the hole, leaves it for Sellers.
Oh, is that gorgeous? The man can play. Look away. There's another guy in New England, Larry. You better stop all that nonsense with McHale and others. Look at that. Vrin almost ended up in the Eastern Block.
That's on all the highlight films in the state of Connecticut tonight.
Oh, knows right now. Well, hope you have a lot of clothes at home. You lost some of them there, Paul.
17 for Sellers, 18 for Smith, 14 for Hennefeld.
UConn cruised to a 71-54 victory, their first road win against the Wildcats since joining the Big East. Said Tate George, quote, this is as good a win as any we've had in a while. I wanted to finally get one here. We all did, end quote. The Huskies forced 25 turnovers, including 17 steals. Nova guard Greg Woodard, who had scored a career-high 27 points in Villanova's upset of Syracuse in the previous game, was held to just 7. Hennefeld was named player of the game, finishing with a career-high 19 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 steals, while Chris Smith also scored 19 and went 4 of 6 from 3-point range. UConn would stay on the road, traveling to East Rutherford, New Jersey to face Seton Hall on Saturday, January 13th. The Huskies were looking for their third consecutive Big East win, which was last accomplished during the 1982-83 season. The Pirates entered the game with a record of 8-4 and 1-1 in the Big East. They started 2 freshmen in the backcourt, Daryl Crist and Terry DeHare, but their strength was in the frontcourt. Franz Volsey, Anthony Avent, and Michael Cooper always presented a physical challenge from the opposition. Here's Rod Sellers.
Seton Hall had Anthony Avent and Franz Volsey. My God, they had a physical team at Seton Hall. Like, whoo, but, you know, and this is, like, again, this era, it kind of built me and my personality. Like, I love physicality. I love the game when it's, I love it. It's a part of who I am now. But Seton Hall, boy, whoo. Like, Pitt was, they were, like, Brian Schroeder was 6'5", I think, 6'5", 6'6". Pitt, I mean, Seton Hall, those guys were 6'9", 6'10". And big and strong. Like, oof.
Once again, Murray Williams started over Dan Cerulik, who after averaging nearly 20 minutes per game over the first 10 games of the season, has averaged only 12 and a half minutes over the last 5 games, including a season-low 3 minutes in the previous game at Villanova. For most of the first half, it was a typical Big East slugfest. There were 9 lead changes, and neither team led by more than 4 points, until UConn went on a 13-3 run to end the half.
Hennefeld, kind of a point forward on this club. Penetrates, leaves it nicely on the baseline. Gwynn squeezes and gets it.
How does Gwynn get the job done down low? Good look again by Hennefeld. He's taking charge out there.
And a timeout, a big run by the Connecticut Huskies here, forces P.J. Carlissimo to talk it over. 9-0 the run, and it's a 10-point lead, 38-28 Connecticut with 1:45 still to play in the first half. And Nadav Hennefeld, who we talked about off the top of the show, does a lot of different things for this club.
He really does, and this one won't necessarily show up in the box, but just stays after it aggressively, doesn't go out of bounds, and keeps it alive. That's just a great heads-up play. by Hennefeld.
The Huskies took a 42-31 lead into the locker room at halftime.
Mike Gorman along with Ron Perry. We're still at halftime. The Connecticut Huskies up by 11, 42-31, and it has been the Connecticut defense all night long that has caused all sorts of problems for Seton Hall. We'll take a quick look at the numbers here and then show you a replay or so that'll justify what we're saying. Field goal percentage is 57% for the Hall. A little bit deceiving. They have really done well with the three-point field goal so far in this game. It's kept them in the game.
It really has, because they haven't taken particularly good care of the basketball, but with the hot shooting, they have stayed within striking distance until the late UConn run to end the half.
Connecticut 5 of 7 at the line. Seton Hall making just 4 trips, and Seton Hall attempting 13 less shots than Connecticut, which is a big number here. Connecticut a 16-12 advantage on the boards, something that Jim Calhoun has to be very, very happy with. And Seton Hall turning it over. That's the story of the game right now. 13 first-half turnovers for this club, only 4 for the University of Connecticut in the face of good, solid man-to-man defense from Seton Hall. Points off turnovers, if you're looking for one stat that really sums up the first half, that would be the one.
Both teams started the second half hot, with each team trading hoops for the first 12 minutes. UConn maintained a comfortable lead during that stretch, never letting Seton Hall get closer than 7 points. Then the Huskies went on a 9-0 run to take a 69-53 lead with 8 minutes, 10 seconds left in the game.
The Huskies have it back to an 11-point lead with 8:45 to go in the game, and Cerulek at the free throw line. 5.7, he's favored now. He has his 5 points now. There's the trap right in front of us again, and Hennefeld, another steal, and he's fouled by Marco Loca. I know we're beginning to sound like a broken record, but it is unbelievable how involved this kid Hennefeld is in the game.
I mean, it's defensively and offensively, and not necessarily just scoring points offensively. He's just around the ball. Here it is again defensively, the good anticipation. And that's what he does defensively. He just keeps an eye on things, and he's in the right place at the right time all the time.
But the Pirates weren't done. Led by Michael Cooper, who scored 19 of his 21 points in the second half, Seton Hall went on a run of their own, outscoring UConn 21-6 over the next 7 minutes and 55 seconds. The run was capped off by a Terry DeHaere three-pointer, his fourth of the game, with 37.8 seconds left, bringing the Pirates to within 1 at 75-74. Hennefeld was quickly fouled with 37 seconds left, and he calmly sank both ends of a 1-1 to make the score 77-74, UConn. Cooper, who was 8-for-8 from the floor in the second half, missed his next shot. Lyman DePriest controlled the rebound, which led to a full-court pass from Hennefeld to a streaking Rod Sellers, who promptly dunked to seal the UConn victory. The final score, UConn 79, Seton Hall 76.
79-76, the final score. Ron, your thoughts?
Well, I'm just really impressed with the way Seton Hall hung in this second half. They played some intense defense, but UConn got into their game plan early, and I think that was key for them. They came out of the gates quickly and were able to force Seton Hall into a lot of turnovers and really control the pace of this game. However, Seton Hall at home shot the ball so well that both teams were able to trade runs, and Seton Hall really with a great shot down the stretch here. If a couple more missed Connecticut free throws had happened, they were right there. You know, they just couldn't convert that last time down.
A funny game, and that it makes you wonder a bit, given the fact that Seton Hall turned the ball over so many times, you would think they'd have no shot to be even in this game. But it shows you, especially what the three-point line can do. You can cover up a multitude of sins.
Yeah, that was, even in the first half, I mean, that was Seton Hall's best stat. They were shooting the ball extremely well, keeping themselves in the game. And Connecticut, on the other hand, was doing a good job converting off their defense. We talked a lot about Hennefeld, and he was just all over the floor in this game. Made some big free throws, Tate George did, and then finally they were able to make a very convincing basket at the end with Rod Sellers to put this thing away.
Sellers followed up his strong performance against Villanova with another beauty, finishing with 19 points on 8 of 11 shooting and 7 rebounds. Hennefeld continued to impress, scoring 14 points while adding 8 rebounds, 6 steals, and 5 assists. He now has 74 steals on the season and moved closer to the UConn single season mark of 83, set by Bobby Doolin in the 1979-80 season. John Gwynn bounced back from his only scoreless game of the season against Villanova, scoring 14 points. The Huskies forced 23 Seton Hall turnovers, including 18 steals. The back-to-back road wins impressed Jim Calhoun, who said after the game, quote, "I said from the beginning I like this team. Now they're showing why. I think we're pretty good," end quote. The flogging at the hands of St. John's just 11 days prior seemed like ancient history. The Huskies now had an overall record of 13-3 and were 3-2 in the Big East, which put them right in the middle of the standings. The three-game winning streak was significant for UConn, as the upcoming schedule seemed daunting. Up next for the Huskies was a big Monday matchup against the 6th-ranked Syracuse Orangemen at the Hartford Civic Center, followed by the number 2-ranked Georgetown Hoyas, also at the Civic Center, just 5 nights later. When the week was over, nothing would ever be the same for the program. Coming up on the next episode of the Dream Season Podcast, Husky Mania is unleashed. The Dream Season Podcast is researched, written, and produced by me, Matt Edwards. Written sources for this episode are the Hartford Current Archives and Hoop Tales, UConn Huskies Men's Basketball by the Mayor, Wayne Norman, and Robert Porter. You can connect with the show via Twitter and Instagram at Dream Season Pod. If you have any memories to share about anything I just mentioned, want to correct me on something I screwed up, or just have general feedback to give, send me an email at dreamseasonpod@gmail.com or call and leave me a message at 903-884-8990. Once I'm done with the regular episodes of the show, I'd love to have an episode that consists entirely of all your memories of the Dream Season. Either leave a message at the above number or email me with an audio recording of your recollections, along with your name and location, and I will include them in that episode. Thank you so much, Steve, for submitting the most recent memory. I really appreciate all the positive feedback I've received so far. It's truly incredible. And as always, thank you so much for listening.